Well, hello. It is the Karsh and Anderson program, and I am back, Doug Karsh, and glad to be with you here on a Thursday. We had an incredible, incredible vacation, and I will recap it in great detail because it's middle of the summer, and while there's still a lot of talk, a lot of stuff to talk about, I figured, you know, why not? I feel, it's weird because I'm away, you go away, and you get used to doing this show, and you get used to talking to Detroit, and you get used to talking to our audience, and stuff happens like when you're on vacation, you're like, I can't wait to share this. I can't wait to share that because, you know, we've been doing this for so long and it's like, I want to get back and tell all my friends about it because we had a wonderful trip. Gator's still out, be out the rest of the week. He'll be back. Kang, am I right? He's back on Monday. Is that correct? Gator's back Monday.
Gator is back Monday.
Okay.
As far as we know.
And you were gone too, right? You were gone.
I was gone the first 2 days this week.
So yeah. Gator was gone. You were gone. I was gone.
Yeah, we were all three of us were gone.
Which never happens. But we, because they always like to have, one Gator out here, certainly Kang, the heart and soul of this program, the backbone of the program. And it's it just so happened this summer that it went down that way. No, we were not in a contract holdout.
That rumor. Speak for yourself, Doug. Mine didn't go too well. I'm back.
Okay. Yeah. but for my wife and I, we were celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary. Now, originally the plan was to go to the British Open. And the reason was because on our honeymoon, we'd get back, you know, we were young and you go stumbling back to the hotel room at 1:30 and the British Open was starting and I'm like, ooh, golf. And it became kind of this funny ongoing joke is we would watch, you know, the live British Open golf in the middle of the night as we were getting home from, you know, being young and rambunctious. And so we thought it would kind of be fun to come full circle. Well, a couple things happened that kept it from happening. One is, you know, you sort of go through real life. And I'll tell you what it was out of state tuition. I'm like, maybe we're not going to be, we needed to keep the financial genie in the bottle. So we had to audible, and cancel a trip to two as it was in Royal Portrush, which is by all accounts, a beautiful course in Northern Ireland, but sort of the plan, it wasn't just to go to the British Open. Believe me, my wife wasn't like 25th wedding anniversary. Yeah. Let's go watch four rounds of golf. It was, we'd go to London for some time, spend some time in London and then, you know, go even only spend a day or two at the British Open. But the issue crept up with Northern Ireland, getting to Royal Portrush is not easy. It is in Northern Ireland. The closest we could stay was Belfast, which was still an hour plus train ride. Getting from London to Royal Portrush includes another flight or a long train ride and then a bus and then a ferry and then another train ride. Like it was going to be, it's difficult to get. I mean, I'm sure people over there are used to it or accustomed to it or know what they're doing. We did not know what we were doing. And we're like, getting from London to Royal Portrush looks like a bit of a pain in the butt. And then the other thing was tickets to the British Open, not easy to get. And you would think, you know, I tried to work some connections, some pretty big connections. And even under those circumstances, it was becoming clear. I get the sense that Royal Portrush is a bit of a postage stamp as far as a host venue and tickets were hard to come by. So between that, between out-of-state tuition and real life getting in the way, we audibled and decided we would just stay here domestically. And so the good news was when we booked all of everything we did to England and Ireland, it was all refundable except one place that gave us a problem when we tried to cancel. And so far we've come out unscathed from that. But so we audibled and we redid everything and we decided we would hit some of our favorite places out west for about half the price. And we had an incredible time. I mean, when you spend, for people who are parents now, are going to be parents or former parents, you can relate to this. Traveling with your kids, and Kang, you're in the middle of it right now. Traveling with their kids and traveling without kids is a completely different experience. Because you know, your kids dictate
because of the kids?
Yes. They dictate the majority of the activities. Now, when they were growing up, we'd take them on adventures and we'd go to national parks.
No, I definitely wanted to go on that jungle gym.
Well, where'd you just get...
I just came back from Bavarian Blast, the brand new water park here in Michigan.
Yeah. So you mix in, you try to mix in some of the things that adults want to do. Because, like, you took them to Vegas. Now you have family out there.
Well, the kids wanted to go to Vegas. I wanted to go to Bavarian Blast. It's a, you know...
Is that what it was?
Yeah. It's you got to give each give and take relationship, Doug.
Well, we went back to places that we had been before. We were just doing without the kids, which means we could hike. I will tell you, if you love national parks and you love getting out and experiencing and like earning the views that you see, I don't know if I can recommend anything more than Glacier National Park. When it was all set, which is in Montana, it's in northern Montana. When it was all said and done, my wife and I hiked over 50 miles. And I mean, there's some debate over one of us getting over 50 and the other one being just shy of 50. And maybe we'll get into the details of that a little bit later. But Glacier National Park, and we're not even scraping the surface of all the different places we can hike and the different hikes we can do. I'll give you a little cheat guide to how you should do it. But Glacier National Park is my happy place. And I will tell you probably the highlight of the trip, because Jansen asked me the highlight of the trip. There is a trail called the Scenic Point Trail, where you spend it's probably close to 9 miles round trip. It took 2.5 hours to get up and 1.5 hours to get down. It felt like the entire time we were in an IMAX movie. You're looking around going, I can't believe how, minuscule we are compared to the mountains and the valleys and what we're looking out over. It was absolutely unbelievable. And it was probably the highlight of the trip, but there were a lot of highlights and there's a lot of like cheat codes and things I will recommend. And I know we got 4 hours together and I know we got a Tiger team that is in a death spiral. And I know we got Lions football coming up soon. So there's a lot to get into sports wise. We got a trade deadline to break down, but I'm going to bring you up to speed on the whole trip coming up next. Tell you what was good, what was bad, what was weird. You travel to different parts of the country, life experiences, you get through some really weird stuff. But we'll bring everybody up to speed on that before we get into the Tigers, which is obviously become a bit of an issue here in Detroit. They won one game while I was gone. We were gone for 12 days. They won one game. And it was the only game I watched because it was on ESPN and I was on a ferry and could stream it and watch the end of that game, saw them win that game, and it's the only game they've won since I've been gone. So the good news is I'm back, and they play today, and we'll see if there is indeed a direct correlation. 248-539-9797. Great to be with you here on Carson Anderson here on 97.1 The Ticket. All right, Doug Karsh back, Gator out. He'll be back on Monday. Kang is here as well. It is the Carson Anderson program here on 97.1 The Ticket. Hope everybody's been good the last 12 days. Last show I did was Friday, July 11th. And we'll get into the Tigers and the fact they've only won one game in the interim since I've been gone. Of course, it was the All-Star break mixed in as well. But instead of bring people up to speed, this is your Out West travel advisory from me. I realize everybody's not going to want a vacation the way we vacationed, but that's fine. Start with this. We took the Amtrak from here to Whitefish, Montana. The Amtrak is not perfect, but then again, neither is air travel perfect. The difference is I love it because it's relaxing and you just get to watch the world go by. And it's a fun way to travel for me. It does take a long time. I mean, we left at like 7 a.m. on Saturday and rolled into Whitefish at 10 p.m. on Sunday. It is a long trek, but we have done, as a family, 10 of these cross-country ventures since our kids were born. If you have the time, I recommend it. There's a lot that I like about it. The biggest of which is just the relaxing nature of train travel, which is, you've got a constantly moving screen in front of you, which is the changing landscape. And you see a lot of stuff between here and Whitefish, Montana. a lot of plains, okay, to be fair, through North Dakota and Montana, but it's beautiful in its own way. The trip through Wisconsin. Wisconsin's an underrated, beautiful state. And, you know, you can pack a cooler, which we did. You know, take a few beers with you. The meals, if you get a room, and I recommend the roomettes, they're small, but they're way cheaper than bedrooms, and they're way better than sitting in coach the whole way. Because you imagine sitting, and they're more like business class airplane travel for, you know, 40 hours wouldn't be easy. So we get the roomettes, which are smaller, but you can sleep, you know, there's a bunk system that gets set up at night for you. But we took, like we said, we took the cooler. And if you get a roomette, your meals are covered. And I would say this, the meals are surprisingly good on the Amtrak. And you go to the cafe car and they, you know, there's four or five meal options. It's not like a deep menu. But, and I get that my food recommendations don't always go over well on this show, but they have stuff for me and stuff for people who like, other options. You know, I'm not a red meat eater, as you know, but they always have plenty of chicken and fish options, and they were surprisingly good. Are there problems with it? Yeah. I mean, on our Amtrak trips, we had a mudslide one year that stopped our train in Denver on its way to Salt Lake. And so we had to get off and figure out the rest on our own, which is wildly inconvenient, but that can happen. This one, what I'm going to tell you, wasn't as bad as it sounds, but it was bad. And that was, there was a toilet backup in our car that occasionally would lead to a smell. Was it a deal breaker for me in Amtrak? No. Did it suck? Yes, it did. Every once in a while, you're like, oh God. But the bottom line was, I'd still do it again, and we will do it again. Because of, you know, we love the train travel. So we go to Whitefish, right? And the last hour, 2 hours of the train trip is through Glacier National Park, and it's incredible. And we've come to love Montana, and, you know, we got a hotel out there we love, which is probably the only expensive place we stayed, the Firebrand Hotel there. And they've got, that town has, it's a great ski and summer town. In the wintertime, it's great for skiing. And if you like out west ski towns, but they're skiing, fishing, golf, hiking, mountain biking. Anything that we would want is there. It's become our happy place. And everybody's kind of got their go-to, you know, destination. For us, it's Whitefish, Montana. And if you were going to go to a national park, I will say this. I would absolutely download the map onto your phone and have that ready to go, because you're not going to have cell service. I would download the hikes you want to do, because you're not going to have cell service. When we rolled into Glacier National Park, we went straight to the visitor center and met up with one of the rangers there that, you know, they've got information desks, and they gave us a physical map of all the roads and the entrances and the vistas and the stuff to see. And then they gave us a hiking map. Not all national parks have that easily accessible. So, you know, I would download stuff just in case you cannot get the maps. But I mentioned the highlight with all national parks, make sure you don't need a timed entry for one of their big ticket items. At Glacier, it's the Going to the Sun Road, and you need to have a timed entry, which we did not have, but we worked around that and did some hikes. Avalanche Lake is a great hike there. 6 or 7 miles, takes you uphill to an incredible lake with, you know, waterfalls leading into it. Rocky Point's a pretty short and easy one that we did there by the Apgar entrance. But Scenic Point, I mentioned, that was the best one we had. It made us feel like we were in an IMAX movie. Logan's Pass, the visitor center at the top of the Going to the Sun Road, is almost useless unless you take a shuttle there, because there's very little parking and it's, you know, you can't stop. Taking the shuttle, though, takes that out of it. And they got these red buses that take you everywhere. After we left Whitefish, we rented a car and we went to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. We were supposed to be there for 4 days. Now, as I've mentioned on the air before, my nephew has been up and down with the Mariners, and he is currently up. And we thought he was going to start on Tuesday outside the All-Star break. They decided to start him Saturday. So we only stayed 2 days in Coeur d'Alene. Just got a taste of it. I'd heard good things about it. It is another great little out west ski and summer town with bars and restaurants and shops. There's a huge lake there. There's hiking. John had mentioned a trail that he said I should do. We ran out of time because of the fact that we had to get to Seattle. We will go back to Coeur d'Alene because there's so much to see and do. Absolutely loved it. Got up, drove to Seattle on Saturday, and this is this past Saturday, to see our nephew Logan pitch. And he did fine, made it into the fifth inning before he got pulled. Young pitcher, pitch count got high in the first inning. Very strange though, to watch in person, be at a stadium and like your nephew's out there pitching. Like, I joked to my brother-in-law who was there, feels like somebody let Logan out on the field, and he's doing great. So that's really fun, and he's been up and down. Hopefully he stays up for a while. We did fly two of our three kids out there to see it because they hadn't seen him live, so we met up with them and had a good time in Seattle. I will say this. So then we made him do the National Park thing. It was incredibly rewarding because my youngest found a place in Olympic National Park, which if you're in Seattle, as the bird flies, Olympic National Park looks like it's just right there. It is a legit 2 to 3 hour drive. It is not easy to get to, which kind of was a surprise, but the big ticket item there is Hurricane Ridge. It was closed down. We were there on Monday. It was closed down and we didn't know why. We'll get into that in a second. My son found a place called the Devil's Punch Bowl. It was a cliff jumping area where it wasn't too high and commoners can jump. It was probably the highlight of the trip for the kids, maybe other than seeing their cousin pitch. But they did plenty of that, and it was incredible. It was in Olympic National Park, and it was part of the, what was the name of the it was a railroad trail, an old shutdown railroad trail. I'll have to find the name of it. But it was absolutely beautiful. The Spruce Railroad Trail is what it was, and I think it was Crescent Lake. You could jump off a bridge, you could jump off cliffs, and they had a great time. And of course, I'm there videotaping all of it. Mount Rainier, we went to Mount Rainier National Park. It was spectacular. We did the Pacific Crest Trail there, and we didn't get the map on this one, so I wish we'd download it. We didn't really know what we were doing, and that's where I was like, I got to tell people, download everything before you get to national parks because you will not have cell service in many of them. And then we went to Paradise, which is up near Mount Rainier. The views were incredible there. So that kind of concludes sort of everything we did. We hiked over 50 miles. Now we kept track of it. Here are the details. I was at 50.2 miles. I think my wife was at 48 miles. The reason is 1.1 miles into one of our hikes, I had an emergency bathroom situation and had to go back. I could sense problems coming. So I turned and headed back, and I was tracking the hiking mileage. So I went 1.1 miles back to the parking lot, took care of business, then caught up. That put me over 50 miles total. So I'm proud to say, because of that, a gastrointestinal distress issue, I topped 50 miles. But we had a great time. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You deserve it.
Thank you. So, hey, Kang, any questions?
Any questions?
Yeah.
Oh, I have a lot of questions, actually.
Yeah.
Hey, are you going to post that selfie, by the way?
The one that I
yes.
showed you?
Yes.
I could.
Did you take a lot of pictures? Is my
took
question.
A million pictures.
A million?
Yes.
Because you're a big video guy. Did you do videos?
A ton of videos, yes.
Really? So is this going to be a Karsh... family video editing job at the end of summer here?
It will be, yeah. There's
it's behind the scenes, little Hard Knocks.
So I'm going to hold one of the pictures up to the cameras for people watching on Twitch and YouTube. I don't know if you could see it. Hopefully you can. It is us at a lake. You can't see it real well. I did my best. Kang taught us this format for taking selfies with the panoramic. And if you look at the picture, the panoramic has my wife on one side of the screen and me on the other. And Kang, was this your idea originally how to do this?
I must have got it from somewhere. I don't even remember. Maybe I saw somebody do it. This was years ago, though.
And it's an awesome way of doing pictures if there's just two of you. You start with one person in the total left side of the screen and the other person in the holding the camera. And you start doing the panoramic until the person on the left side of the screen is out of the picture. Then you stop. That person runs over, grabs the camera, and you continue going the rest of the way. And you go, like the I guess you almost have to be seeing the picture to understand. I've done a terrible job of describing this, but you get these panoramic photos where it's the two of you, but you're on either side of a picture frame.
Yeah, it's cool because you get to say you took that picture yourself without, you know,
yeah,
a tripod or anything like that, and it's a nice long panoramic picture.
Yeah, and like, we got one at the top of one of our hikes where the two of us are posing. I'll see if I can hold up another one here, and that's at the scenic trail, the one I'm holding up right now, where she's at one side. You can't see it all. This was kind of a useless. I tried. I should maybe post it. But anyway, yeah, it's. It's a cool way to do pictures when you have something in the middle. So you start with the panoramic. When one person's out, you stop. The original person that was in the picture runs over, grabs the camera. You go pose on the other side. You continue, and you get these panoramic shots of two people in it that's taken by just you. So
one more question for you.
Yes.
So this was an anniversary trip, right?
Yes.
A wedding anniversary trip.
Yep.
So are you, I mean, was this, does it, number one, does it have to be a romantic part, because it sounds like you guys did a lot of,
yeah,
I mean, not, was, no pun intended, was a lot of physical stuff, but outdoors. And then two, are you more in love with your wife than ever, Doug?
Yes, we had a great trip. It was weird traveling without the kids, and then we obviously did see him at the end of the trip, but it was definitely different because there was what are we gonna do today, which is hasn't been a part of the formula for 20 years, is what do we want to do. Because usually, you know, I mean, we're not that selfish, but anyway, it was good. And yeah, I mean, look, at the end, we'd hike all day and then go to dinner at night. Go find a nice restaurant and have dinner at night and earn that extra beer or two that you would have, the cheesecake. All right, let's get to the Tigers. Obviously, we have reached a critical point in the season. How do you fix it? Does it get fixed? We'll get to that next here on Carson Anderson. A 97-1, the ticket. CGC Water is now CGC Home Services, specializing in providing top-tier plumbing, air purification, and water treatment services. An authorized independent Connecticut dealer, CGC Home Services offers the best whole-house water treatment systems. CGC Home Services, fully licensed plumbers, will handle all your plumbing needs. CGC also offers Aeris Active Pure technology, reducing 99% of airborne bacteria, viruses, and mold. For water and air purification, plumbing too, call CGC Home Services at 855-339-4242 today. Doug Karsh, Scott Anderson out today, back after a trip out west, and glad to be back. Not glad to be talking about a struggling Tiger team. So, there's a few things about this. They're currently in a great spot, okay? Let's not forget that. Currently in a great spot. They got one of the best records in baseball. We have a long stretch of them playing well. It's more reflective of them most likely being an authentically good team. And it's not just this year, obviously, it dates back to August and September and into October of last year, right? And that's, you know, that's what this is. This is a long stretch. There's more evidence that they're really good, and they might not be as good as the record indicated before. More evidence of that than them being really bad. Recent results, they've looked dreadful. And the thing about it is, if you compartmentalize each facet of the team, they have failed. Their starting pitching has failed. Their bullpen has failed. And the offense has been pathetic. And it's not what we've become accustomed to with seeing this team. What's probably more rattling in Detroit than it is in a lot of places is that was playing well, teams that were playing well, is there's not a long track record of a lot of guys playing at the level they played at. You know, I mean, guys like Zach McKinstry and some of the bullpen arms and you know, Dylan Dingler and, you know, examples of guys who don't have years of playing well. They've been, you know, good, very good. But it's a lot easier to look at something as just a slump when you have established star players, right? Established players that have given you years of great play, not guys who've given you a year or half a year or a few months of great play. So it's easier to have faith in those teams that have long track records than this team. And I'm kind of stating the obvious here. So I understand if people have major concerns. I mean, your own feelings are valid. They're always valid. They're yours. They're based upon your experience. Now, sometimes those feelings towards a team or the conclusions you're drawing are reflective of how much you follow a sport and how much you watch what other teams are doing. Because you can easily do this and find a time. Like right now, who has the best record in baseball? Milwaukee Brewers do. The Brewers this year have endured an 0-4 start and a 2-7 stretch. Houston, second best record in baseball. Saturday, and this past Saturday, as recently as this Saturday, they ended a stretch where they lost 7 of 8. Toronto has the third best record in baseball currently. They've lost 8 of 9 at a point this year. And it's the Tigers' turn to go through it. There was a reason why we kept citing about how incredible it was that the longest stretch of poor play they had was 3 3-game losing streaks through the first half of the season. The pain that we endured was minimal compared to everybody else. The undermining of confidence, the erosion of confidence in our team, it wasn't really there because it's extended losing streaks and extended stretches of poor play that can erode away the confidence. We had almost none of that through the first half of the season. Three games. 3-game losing streaks was the max we had to deal with. So that made it very easy to just kind of go through the first half of the season with, I mean, almost no worries. It wasn't panic. It wasn't reasons to disbelieve in this group. However, you may recall throughout the first half, I kept saying there's going to come a stretch. Remember this. There's going to come a stretch where we will be longing for the days that they were playing this well and answering the bell over and over again because seasons are too long to avoid this. And there's too many variables in the sport of baseball. I mean, the best teams of all time still lose 60-plus games during a regular season. Still are winning usually at most 2 out of every 3. So it's not like football where you can go 15-2 or basketball where you can win 3/4 of your games. In baseball, you have to endure a lot more losses than in the other sports, even if you are one of the best teams because of sort of the random nature of the game. But as I mentioned, I think everybody's feelings are valid. And what I guess I want to know is in this stretch of losing 9 of 10, how are you processing what is going on? I mean, how do you see this? Do you see this as your feelings are unchanged? You're not concerned? Would be one end of the spectrum to this being mortal and a reflection of the beginning of the end at the other end of the spectrum. And there's a lot of stages in between there, right? There's a lot of stages in between there. I mean, this is typical. What's going on now is typical. The best news of all of this is it's happening right before the trade deadline. It's happening right before they can really do something different with their roster. And we've done this year after year after year. When you are good or bad or in between, what you want to be is defined before you get to a trade deadline. We are clearly sellers. We are clearly buyers. We are clearly sellers with parts to sell. We are clearly buyers, and we know what our needs are. Want to be defined as one or the other. When you're in between, it gets very difficult. Hey, we're on the fringe of chasing this, and you have to make a tough decision. This is an easy decision to make. Buy. Now, to get into the question as to what, because it feels like all three aspects of this team, starting, pitching, bullpen help, and more offense, all could be addressed. And that brings us to an unknown. The unknown is Scott Harris. Because we've seen Scott Harris make some quality free agent moves. like in the off season, go sign somebody. Some of them have been very quality, others not so much. But we've seen the net-net of his free agent signings has been very good. We've seen him sign players that felt like they'd be inconsequential, or acquire players that felt like they'd be inconsequential, like Zach McKinstry or Tyler Holton or Chase Lee, which is trade, free agent, a trade, waiver claim, and trade, that turned out to be very consequential. And we see him sell reasonably well. Never seen the man buy. Now, he's only been here a few years, but he's never been in this position. And, you know, some GMs are better at it than others. And right now, the unknown is Scott Harris also good at this? Trading away the right prospects, the ones you won't be ruining, right? You don't want to trade away ones you rue. You don't want to longtime Detroiters talk forever about giving up a Hall of Fame pitcher who was at single A at the time in John Smoltz for Doyle Alexander. You don't want to trade away the future Hall of Famer. You want to trade away the guy that it isn't going to amount to anything. You hope that somebody calls and asks you about the prospect that you don't have as much faith in. Because we all go on these rankings, right? I mean, God bless you if you have time to go down and scout and you know what you're looking for at double A, at single A. But we rely on these rankings. Rankings really are just somebody else's opinion. And they probably can't watch as much to really have a true idea as to how good or bad a player is. Other teams can. Other teams are job scouts that are following around West Michigan and Erie right now where they see every game. And they're trained in making those decisions. So when the Tigers last year traded Jack Flaherty for what didn't feel like market value, it felt like two prospects are like, huh? One of them helped them win a division. One of them helped them qualify for the postseason last year, Trey Sweeney, and the other one is one of the best prospects in the Tigers organization, and Tyron Lorenzo. At the time, it didn't feel like that was a good return, did it? But the Tigers were there scouting. They got somebody's like number 7 and number 12 prospect, and we're like, that's all they got. The guy was pretty good. But you want to sell the right prospects, and you want to acquire the right guys and help you win. You don't want the next Aubrey Huff and Chris Washburn, right? You want the next Rasheed Wallace. Do cross-pollinate sports. 248-539-9797. All right, so how are you processing what's going on right now from both ends of the spectrum, right, to this is it mortal in the beginning of the end all the way up to I'm really not that concerned. This is just baseball. 248-539-9797. We'll talk to the people next. Kang, I want your opinion. Text coming in as well. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. All right, so yeah, things have not been good. How are you processing this? They're still in a really good spot. And the big picture is, you know, you zoom out and you look at where the Tigers organization is. I mean, they're in a great place, but you've got to figure out what's going on now. And sometimes it's just the nature of baseball. Sometimes it literally is slumps happen during seasons. It's just a lot easier to process these things when you have a team and a bunch of players with long track records. This group does not have a long track record. And so you're talking about it can rattle the confidence of a fan base like this one more. How are you processing it? What are you seeing right now? How dire is this? Or is it not dire at all? 248-539-9797. Chris in St. Clair Shores, you're on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Chris.
Hey, I just want to say, I mean, what the Tigers were doing in the beginning of the season to up until now, this losing streak or whatever, they were playing at a dominant level, right around or over 700 winning percentage. Nobody does that for an entire year. They're damn near winning every series. So when you look at the standings right now, you know, with the Tigers, they were overachieving then, and they're overachieving still now. And they have the same record as the LA Dodgers, who on paper, you know, should have a higher record. Maybe they're underachieving, but ultimately it's still good for first in the division. tops in the league, give or take a game or two. And not to mention, you have players who are still performing. Like, for example, you got three starting pitchers that have an ERA at three or below. And, you know, at the end of the day, you don't have superstars on this team offensively. But collectively as a group, you know, the guys work well together. And do we need to sell the farm to add a piece to make this team, you know, a World Series contender? No, they're a World Series contender right now, just like every other team is in the league. I mean, right now we got a little slump. I think it's better to have that happen now than it is towards the end of the year. And again, just to reiterate my last point, we're not supposed to be here, you know? So what piece are you going to get that you got to give up two, three, top 10, 15 prospects for, you know, probably a rental and, you know,
I'm going to stop you for a second, Chris. If you say and if you believe that they're not supposed to be here, why did you invest anything? Because that strikes me that you don't really believe in this group. Am I misinterpreting that?
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily not believe in the group. But what I'm saying is they're overachieving. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, you have a great manager. You have some good young players. And a lot of your young players are not, you know, playing to their capability, like, you know, Parker Meadows or, you know, whoever else you want to add into that mix. You got guys that came on this year and have been playing, you know, better than they did last year. But ultimately, at the end of the day, this is baseball. Like, these guys all can play. But what I'm saying is they don't necessarily – you can't call a team a World Series winner right now. I mean, whatever is going to happen when we get to the playoffs is going to happen. And we've seen it time and time again. The hot teams win. So if you add a piece, what do you add? And I don't mind adding a piece, but just don't overpay for something that, you know, unless you got team control for several years, I just don't think, like an Eugenio Suarez, like I'm good on that. Like I'm not giving up two, three top 10 guys for a guy that's going to be here for, you know, 2 months.
So what's interesting, and thank you for the phone call, and we'll get into the specifics of who they might go after, but, you know, a rental player is worth whatever a team can get for him. And the format of baseball is set up to really benefit the sellers when it comes to trade deadline. Because this format, where they now have six teams getting into the postseason, means that there are far fewer teams that are defined as out of it. There are three teams in the American League that are more than five games out of a playoff spot. I think there's six in the National League. And I kind of, in the past, when the Tigers were in that position, I kind of talked about if you're five games or less at the trade deadline, go for it. You don't have to sell. You can, but it feels like it's worth, you can make up five games. But look, man, as far as you sound less concerned than I think the play has dictated, that I think is warranted given their current play. There are things that can be problematic. There could be water finding its level, right? Some guys might have been way overachieving, and now they're gonna go through a slump to kind of get to what they typically are. There are other things like Riley Green, for instance. I was looking this up today because it was easy. In July, he has 66 at bats. Okay, he's got 12 hits. All right. Now, there's also things like reaching on air and other things like that. There are some, you're going to have sacrifice fly or whatever, which are productive at bats. But 66 at bats means 66 hits, outs, or reaching on air. He has 12 hits. So that's, you know, I mean, roughly there are other ways that you can get out. But there are 54 outs to be accounted for in the month of July from Riley Green. 31 of the 54 strikeouts. 31. That is an incredible high number of strikeouts. So what is that? Is that a fixable tweak in his swing? I mean, in baseball, when they find what you can't handle and word gets around, that's the landmine that you have to be able to answer. I mean, remember when Javi couldn't lay off slider outside the zone, breaking away from him? Everybody then threw him that over and over and over again. Why is Riley Green swinging and missing so much? I mean, look, again, I've been gone for a good period of time. To me, for a minute there, it looked like high fastballs. I don't know if it's still the case. But that's the kind of thing that you have to be able to answer the bell. When somebody finds a weakness, you have to prove that you can handle that, or they're just going to keep going back to that over and over again. Feedback coming in. They really miss a healthy Carpenter. The 2 weeks he played hurt and the 2 weeks he's been out, they have been on the slide. Carpenter's in the rehab. He played game two last night, I believe it was, last night in Toledo. It was game two back for him. So, yeah, a healthy and productive Kerry Carpenter in the lineup does help. Derek in a truck says, it's not about the amount that they lost. It's how they lost. This offense has been terrible. Yeah, when you lose games, something looks bad. And, it's not that they lost. It's how they lost. It's hard to look good and lose. I never really liked it. It's not that they lost. It's how they lost. Something goes wrong when you lose games. Right now, I'm not concerned. The Dodgers have lost 12 of the last 15. No need to worry about the Tigers yet, writes an unnamed texter. Next one. Any impactful trade is going to include one of your better prospects, Doug. The idea that this team is going to have to give, that a team is going to give you something impactful for peanuts is a fantasy. Nobody said that. If you took what I said as I think you're giving a peanuts for an impactful player, that's not it. The question is because right now the Tigers, I'll just give you an example, right? They have a top 10 organization in the minors. And of their top 10 players, there's more than a few that aren't going to make it. Okay, they might be highly regarded prospects. You're hoping that you give up one of those that aren't going to make it, not the ones that will. There's no way everybody in their top 10 is going to make it, right? Let's say Max Clark and Kevin McGonigal are going to make it, but Bryce Rainer isn't. Or Rainer and McGonigal are going to make it, but Clark isn't. You're hoping, because you scout your own guys. You probably have a sense for which of your own guys are overrated and which of your guys are underrated. You want to give up the ones that you think even yourself are overrated, right? 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson, open lines. We'll get into some specifics with the trade deadline. How are you processing this recent stretch of Tiger play? 97.1 The Ticket.